I've really decided that last week and this week is probably three sermons that I've squeezed into two, so I apologize. Call the Mexican restaurant now if you want to take a second. I'll try to get us out pretty quick. Last week we started kind of talking about the path principle and what that looked like, so we're going to kind of continue talking about that this morning. In the classic book or movie, if you're like me, right, Alice in Wonderland, Alice comes upon this junction in the road, and she sees two directions in which she can go, and she stops, and then a smile appears, and of course the Cheshire cat fleshes out, and she says, or asks, "Would you please tell me which way I ought to go from here?" And the cat, you know, he asks a pretty good question, I guess. He says, "That depends a good deal on where you want to get, Alice." And so Alice says, "Well, I don't really care much where I go." And so the cat says, "Then it doesn't really matter which way you go." And that's right, isn't it? That's pretty good wisdom. It doesn't really matter which way you go if you don't care where you're heading. Any path will do, so to speak. And there's a lot of understanding in that. That cat can kind of be annoying, but he's pretty spot on most of the time. Sometimes, though, it is nice just to kind of get out and wander around. That's what I like to do whenever we go to somewhere that we haven't ever been. I like to check in to the hotel and just try to get my feet somewhere on a sidewalk just to be around the people from that area, just to kind of get a little bit of a feel for the place. There are people that I know that like to go hiking. That is not me. I don't like to go hiking, but whenever they go hiking, as a family, they take little GPS devices with them, so that way if they get a loss from each other or they come to different forks in the road, they can figure out which way they're going to go. But again, there's just sometimes when you're like, I just want to get off of the beaten path, and when you do that, you can see some really amazing things. But also sometimes when you wander, that things can get twisted and they can get troublesome. You may end up in places that you didn't intend to be, places and things that you never intended to find that you did when you were just aimlessly wandering. You can get stuck. There's really a whole host of other dangers that are out there. And again, last week we talked about that idea of the path principle. The path principle simply states this: the path that you're on, the road that you're on, determines the destination that you're going to arrive at. And again, we talked about this. I probably shouldn't have said left out of the parking lot. North, you know, if you head north, I still say if you go here, you turn left, you're going to get to Grove a lot quicker than if you go here and turn right. But you go north, right, you're going to go to Grove. But if you don't go north, you're probably never going to get to Grove, or it's going to take you a really, really, really long time. You would be on the wrong path. And so I have to be on the right path to lead to the destination that I want to go. And that's sort of the path principle. But we have to be careful, right, about with which path we choose. Like Wes read earlier, Proverbs 14:12 tells us that there's a way that seems right to a man, but in the end is the way to death. So we have to be careful about which path that we're on. And so this week we're going to talk just a little bit about something like the separation principle to go along with that path principle. So there's not only a path principle idea, there's this idea of separation. And the separation principle, it's pretty easy too. And it simply is, but by choosing a path, we inherently exclude all other paths. We separate ourselves from all other paths, and that makes sense, right? We're not talking rocket science, or you wouldn't have me up here talking, right? So the thing is when you come to a fork in the road, well, if you're like Yogi Berra, you take it, right? But if you come to a fork in the road, you got to pick which side, or if you pick which side, whichever side you pick, the other side you are inherently separating yourself from. And that's just how it works. So that's how the separation principle works. It's pretty simple, but see, not every road in life is a path that's worth taking. And so we need to separate ourselves from bad paths. And so sometimes when it comes to religion, a lot of times people throw that logic out the window, right? A lot of people don't think there are any bad paths. In fact, most people are going to say, if you're heading for a higher being or heaven, as you might call it, maybe the spiritual realm, any path will do. In fact, Hinduism has a pretty good saying. They say that there are hundreds of paths up the mountain, all leading in the same direction, so it doesn't matter which path you take. The saying goes on that the only one wasting time is the one who runs around the mountain telling everyone else that their path is wrong. There's a lot of insight in that saying. But kind of what the Hindus believe is that it doesn't matter what path you take, except that worst path, right? The one that is going around in circles telling everyone else they're wrong. But I can kind of get behind that logic. It is a fool's errand to just run around and pointing and telling everyone they're wrong, but I can't get behind the logic that says, doesn't matter. We're all going to get to the same place. It doesn't really matter what path you choose in life. It doesn't matter what kind of moral code that you choose to align your life with. It's all going to end up in the same place. But that's not what Scripture says. That's really not what even logic says if we follow logic in life. In life, we know that there are principles that are always true. And they are often contradictory to other things, to other paths. The Bible has always maintained that there is only one path to God. And repeatedly, Solomon throughout the book of Proverbs tells his children or his listeners that there is a way that seems right to a man. But in the end, it leads to death. And I don't think he's just talking about physical death here. I think he's really talking about spiritual death, that there's always a way that seems right to a man. But in the end, it's not so good. And that other scripture that Wes read, Proverbs 21:2, every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs his heart. And we know that first part of that statement is absolutely true, right? None of us set out on any path in life without thinking this is the right thing to do, at least at the time, right? You may not know the full consequences, or maybe you do, right? But maybe you think you can maybe avoid the consequences. And right now, in this moment, this is the right thing to do. And then we kind of justify that through plenty of things where maybe we're like the consequences won't be so bad. And we justify that maybe by thinking maybe nobody will notice. We have a lot of justification in order to choose the path before us. But in the end, Proverbs is right. We think it's right a lot of times, but if we don't add that second part of the equation, it becomes problematic. That second half of the equation is that the Lord weighs the heart. In other words, we need to be learning and leaning upon the Lord to understand what the right path really is on the road to life. Not every path is worth taking. Not every path is going to take you where you want to end up. And many of those paths leave a lot of people broke and hurt. And in order, I think, to live a successful life, that there are some paths that you need to stay away from, some paths that you need to separate yourself from. And this idea, this separation principle is really, it's repeated all throughout Scripture. It's repeated in a lot of different ways on how to separate yourself from other paths. We can go all the way back to the book of Genesis. God calls the nation of Israel. Even before that, he calls Abraham, and he says to Abraham that I'm going to give you a son. And through this son that the whole world is going to be blessed, that you're going to have a nation. And again, from that nation, all the nations are going to be blessed. And he's calling them out by saying the Israelites are my chosen people. They are different from the rest of the nations. That does not mean that God didn't love the rest of the nations. It just means that he is separating his people, through which something amazing is going to happen through the Israelites, right? We're going to get Jesus. And that's what he's saying here. He's separating them now. And the separation principle, it applies to a lot of things that would make up this nation, right? What all the things would they be separated from? They couldn't eat certain foods, right? They had to be separated from certain lifestyles that the rest of their neighbors would enjoy. They had to separate themselves in how they would dress, in how they would worship, in how they would behave. And if you look at ancient secular history, it's fascinating how their culture was different from the surrounding nations. The Jews were different. They dressed different. They looked weird. The Jews were separated. The separation principle, it's established in the Old Testament, but it continues throughout the New Testament. But in a word, I think before we leave the Old Testament, understanding in a word here, God called them to be holy. Leviticus 19:2 says that you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. And to be holy means to be separate, or maybe a better way to understand it, it means to be different. And there's a different category for separate things. It means that we don't look the same as those who follow God. I think that means when someone is holy, whenever someone else is looking at you and someone else doesn't follow God, they should be able to clearly see that you are following God, that you are holy, that you are different, that you're on a different path because you've separated yourself from all other paths. Christians should be a people who keep themselves separate from worldliness. Now stop right there. That doesn't mean that we can't be in the world. That doesn't mean that we can't go to places of the world. For one, in hopes of redeeming the world, that's exactly what Jesus did. Jesus was often criticized for being friends of the sinner, for going to places where sinners were. And a lot of times, don't we take the same exact stance as the Pharisees? I think we do, where we say you can't be with sinners and still be holy and separate. I would say let's try to tell that to Jesus. I think he would disagree. Jesus went to the sick because they needed a doctor. He went to them in order to redeem them, to bring them to holiness as well. But that doesn't mean that Jesus participated in every part of that lifestyle, right? Right. That doesn't mean that Jesus all of a sudden became a sinner simply because he was willing to be around sinners. He still looked different. He still acted different, and it's compelling. I would say that it's still compelling to live a holy life. When you do it, I think people notice. You probably will get criticized by some, and then some might look at you and say, do you think you're some sort of holier than thou now? Sure, you might get some criticism, but the thing is, you are a light shining. And you're a light shining that's going to be a beacon to those that whenever their path ends and they realize where they've left them, they're going to look back and they're going to say there was some light over there. And you're going to be that light because you were separate, because you were different. The separation principle tells us that when you're on the right path, that we end up in the right place and we're going to be happy about getting there. Now let's kind of just expand on that a little bit more. This idea, it involves God, right? That kind of seems to be a no-brainer whenever we're talking in church that something's going to involve God. But when we're talking about Christianity, about being separate from anything that is not of Christ, it would make sense to say that if we're going to separate ourselves of anything that's not of Christ, then we have to have God in our lives to help us on this path. But there's two ways, probably a whole lot more of other ways, that people have tried to live holy lives without God's help. And the first one of those is those who try to use holiness as a badge of honor. And they try to say, look at me. Aren't I a special person because I do these holy things and I wear these holy garments? and they're trying to do everything they can so that other people will look at them and say, man, what a special person they are. But really, they're doing that for their own glory. They're doing that for their own selfishness. And Jesus says in Matthew 6, verse 2, that they have the reward that they're only going to get. And you just think about that for a second. You may want the praise of men and women around you, but in the grand scheme of things, if that's the only reward you're going to get, are you satisfied with that? But what he's saying is they got their earthly reward, but not their heavenly reward, and that's a harsh reality for those of us that like to please people. For those of us who are really keen on what other people are thinking and saying and believing about us, that's an easy trap to fall into, that our only reward of being holy is right here. And that's an easy trap to fall into. Sometimes we try to be so holy so we look good to other people. Sometimes we do these things so that we look good, not so much to honor God. And that may not be what we say with our mouths, but a lot of times in our heart of hearts, it's really that we just want other people to think well of us. So that's one way that people try to be holy without having God involved. Another way is kind of even more tricky. It's when they try to be holy for God without ever doing it with God. All of their holiness is based on their own efforts, their hard work, and it's often following those rules and regulations and those check marks saying, I've checked off all of these things in holiness. And it's not necessarily so that other people can see. There might be an element to that, but it's almost as if you're bringing this list to God and saying, I've done all of these things you've told me to do. Isn't that enough, Lord? And sometimes I wonder if some of us are saying, that's pretty good, or God say, you know, I would like to have a little bit more involvement in your life, and we're just kind of okay with let us do our part and you kind of stay out of our way. The idea of with and for are huge differences, right? And a lot of times we try to be holy for God and not with God. Last June, we talked a lot about the book of Colossians, and there's a lot in there that Paul talks about in Colossians. But Colossians 2 deals a whole lot with this idea. And the idea there is that rules can't make us holy. Following rules can't make us holy. One is rules just don't have that kind of power. That isn't how rules work. They don't have any kind of power to make you holy, right? We all, most of us here, have drove a car, and we all see that speed limit sign, and you know where I'm going to go with this, right? It doesn't matter if that sign says 55 or 155, right? Well, what does it mean? If that sign says 55 and I don't want to go 55, we all know what that means, right? How many of us, by a show of hands, follows the speed limit, right? Liars, none of you all. Well, maybe not. Maybe you all are telling the truth, right? But we've all got our reasons, right? When we talk about speeding, we're in a hurry. We got plenty of things to do. I drive better when I speed, maybe. All of those things. But what's happening is we are justifying breaking the rules. Every time we do that, we're just justifying breaking the rules because say, well, it's okay if I do it this time. But every time I do that, that just highlights how terrible of a rule follower I am. There are thousands of rules that I should be following, not just as a citizen of this country, but as a citizen of the kingdom of heaven. And even those rules, I'm not really good at following very often or all the time. And whether that's just weakness or whether that's just blatant sin that I disregard and ignore the rules in front of me, that's just how it seems to be. We are really bad at following rules. And so I'm glad that rules can't make us holy because we'd never get there, right, if it was up to them. But the second side of this that Colossians gets into a little bit, it's a little bit deeper, right? You got to peel back some layers in your heart. And so the rules sometimes often deceives people. The rules often deceives people into thinking that the rules are what matter. And so people begin to live their lives to the rule. And it's sort of like standardized testing, and that's probably a long conversation that we could all argue about. But sometimes with standardized testing, for teachers, the temptation becomes to start teaching to the test, right? To stop teaching how to gather information or a love of information and start teaching the kids to the test so they'll do good on the test. And thus the teacher can check the box for the school district, and they've done all these things to do well. And I get that concept, but it's sort of like the dog or the tail wagging the dog. And church folks can kind of do that too. Sometimes we end up saying that the rules and regulations are something you've got to follow, and I'm so convicted in this that you've got to follow these rules and regulations to be holy that I'm going to impose on all the other people. And all of this is saying that I think the rules and regulations are more important than my relationship with God. Now, you might be raising your hand and saying, aren't rules and regulations part of your walk with God? And absolutely they are. But all of us, right? All of us should know that you can follow rules and regulations without having any kind of relationship with the one who made the rules and regulations. God wants us to walk with him. And when you walk with him on his path, you're going to be in his shoes. And you're going to do the things that he would have you do and not do the things that you wouldn't do, because Jesus is doing these things with you. And he wouldn't do these things because of rules and regulations. It's because of relationship. Again, those things can't save. As much as I would love to stand up here with a to-do list and a to-don't list, I would love to be able to say that. But if I gave us all that, what we'd have? We would have some really good people. And we'd have some really good and moral people. But good and moral people won't be necessarily be given a heavenly reward if they don't have a relationship with Christ. So we need to separate ourselves from anything that's holding us back walking with God. That is the practice of staying with God on his path and separating yourself from anything else. I read a story of a man from Maine, and he was going lobstering, and he had hired a man to take him out there. And there were a lot of rocks, and it was treacherous, and this man was pretty nervous. And it was a foggy day, and the guy who was driving the boat was just going normal speed. But again, it was a foggy day, and that was way too fast for the visitor. And so he said, you know where all the rocks are? And the man said, nope, I know where they ain't. That's probably what you want, right? That's a pretty good deal. Sometimes I think that's what my job is to find out where all the paths lead, where all the treacherous spots are on the path, like why to enter or don't enter here, and given all the reasons and the rationale of why not to go or enter into this venture. Sometimes I do that with my kids. I do that with others, and it would be easier sometimes, you know, like this idea, if we just stuck with the stork is where babies come from, wouldn't that be the easiest logic to use? And when you think about it, in explaining things, sometimes we use that logic. We follow that path. And I would say, again, that would be the easier way to go about it. But I think this lobstering guy has the right idea. He has the easiest route. You don't have to know where all the pitfalls are. You just have to know where the path is, right? The right path. And when you're on the right path, you're not going to trip over any rocks. So the key to holiness is to make sure that you're on the path with God, because God isn't going to sink. God's going to be just fine. So if you're on the path with God, separate yourself from all other paths. Philippians 1:27 gives us a little bit more of what that looks like. And this is kind of this whole sermon has been stomping on my toes, but even more so now. Only let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ. Some versions say, conduct you in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. This is what holiness looks like. If you're at a gathering and you would be uncomfortable if Jesus walked in, this is like my Bill Ingvall part. You're probably on the wrong path, right? If we're watching a TV show or reading a book or looking at something on the internet, and we don't want to share our screen with Jesus, it's probably not a good thing that we're on. It's probably not the right path. If you're talking about your spouse or your friend or your neighbor with someone, and you're talking about them with words and even attitudes that you would never use about Jesus, yeah, probably on the wrong path. All of us have chosen a path, and we think that our path is okay because it is in our own eyes. And I'm not going to hurt anybody with my path. I mean, think about it. Has gossip really ever hurt anybody if it doesn't get back to them? Sure, right? How many people, how many vessels have been destroyed because of the words that other people have said? How many people can point back to gossip to a person and see what that damage is? You can't really say that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. I'll tell you, for me, I'll take your best ball bat swing all day, every day, right? Words can hurt. Words have a lot of power to them. And we've got to separate ourselves from anything that Jesus wouldn't be with, because if we want to be with Jesus, that's just how it works. It's not easy. Jesus said it would be hard. In Matthew 7:13, you enter God's kingdom only through the narrow gate. That the highway to destruction is broad, its gate is wide for many that choose the way, but the gateway to life is very narrow. The road is difficult, and only a few ever find it. And we see Jesus is the gate. In John chapter 10 and 14, Jesus is telling us that he's the gate, he's the way. Jesus isn't involved in any path that's the wrong path. I don't care how nice it may be or how well it seems in your eyes that it's going. Jesus isn't going to be on that path. You've made a wrong choice somewhere. So separate yourself from that path and get back to the path where Jesus is at and begin walking with him again. I'll close with a story that I've told probably several times. A musician by the name of Brian Welch, he had a life-changing experience. And he was not a man that walked with God in any way that you would say. If you've seen him, probably if you've still seen him, you would either try to give him some money because he looks homeless, or you would roll up your windows and lock your doors because he looks dangerous. And maybe none of us in here know a whole lot about heavy metal music, but if we did, we would all know Brian Welch. He's one of the founding members of a band called Korn. Not ever my thing, and I'm not recommending him, but they've sold over 25 million records. And in the pop music world, that's not really even a drop in the bucket. But in heavy metal music, that makes you a pretty big thing. And he's got a pretty impressive story, because he decided to eventually leave the group and put his life on a different path. And he wrote a book, and I'm going to sum it up for you. What changed in Brian was he met Jesus. In fact, one of the things he says is that he came home and was ready to shoot up some methamphetamine when he looked and seen his daughter, who had just sat down in front of the TV. And in that moment, he was like, God, if you're there, this girl doesn't stand a chance with a father like me. And he began to pray, and he began to change his life from that day. But before he met Jesus, he said that his life was filled with loneliness, depression, self-destruction, and addiction to drugs. Now, granted, he's wealthy and he's famous and he's got all these things, but he finds himself lacking the thing he needs the most. His quote is this. He says, I was able to test drive this world. I got fame and money. I tried all the drugs, the women, and all of that stuff. And when Christ touched me, none of that stuff mattered. I think he's on to something. This is what Solomon would say in the book of Ecclesiastes, is I've tried all of these things, but in the end, this is what's important. Well, when you're on the right path with God, you really see how every other path doesn't mean anything else. When you've separated yourself to be holy with God, all other paths fade. They might be interesting, right? That's the temptation. And so maybe this time, you know, when that temptation hits, you say, I've been down that road before. I'm not going to go as far down. Maybe I'm not going to go down it at all. I know what happens when I follow this to its logical conclusion, and it didn't feel so good. I think we've all been in situations like that. Maybe some of us are still dealing with situations like that. So if I know that God isn't on that path with me, maybe he will show back up whenever I'm ready for him. But that path that I'm on right now, he's not with me. I want to find a way to stay with God. And that's the commitment that we have to make daily. Because if we're honest, that's what the devil wants so much, is for us to get off the path. And in his rationale, it just takes one day. One day off the path, and you may never get back on it. And so we wake up and we try to recommit our lives to Christ every day. And so this morning, I don't know, the Spirit may not be tugging on your heartstrings. Maybe he's just knocking on the door of your heart and saying, you need to have help from your brethren. If you're honest with ourselves, we're looking around, maybe we're not sure which path of life we should be on, and we need to find our way back to Christ. I don't know what that necessarily means to you. Maybe you need to give your life to Christ. Maybe you've never been baptized into him, becoming one of his brothers and sisters, becoming a true child of God. It may be simply that you just need to hang on, right? That you've been veering along the wrong path. Maybe you need to make amends with someone and go ask for forgiveness. It may be here that you're here this morning and you just need to talk to someone and you're not sure, but maybe you're pretty sure Jesus isn't with you. Maybe alone, we don't have those answers. But I think talking together and praying together with our brothers and sisters, those things help. Coming forward is always a hard thing. And so if that's not for you, seek one of us out, an elder, a deacon, or myself after the service. We are always available. There are phone numbers on the bulletin and in the directory. I would bet that there's anyone in this congregation who would be happy to talk to you if you just ask somebody who looks like that they need a conversation. So whatever your need may be this morning, we encourage you to come as together we stand and we sing.